Chapter 5. The Age of Jackson. The rapid settlement of West Tennessee ended the frontier phase of Tennessee's history. Thereafter, the state served more as a seedbed for migration to other states than as a destination for immigrants. Forever restless and in search of fresh land, Tennesseans were frequently in the vanguard of westward migration. They were prominent among the pioneer settlers of Arkansas, Texas, Missouri, Illinois, Mississippi, and Alabama, and joined enthusiastically in the California Gold Rush. Transportation needs loomed large as Tennessee sought to widen its traffic with the rest of the United States. By 1820, the first steamboats had reached Nashville, providing the mid-state region with quicker, more reliable service to downriver markets. Goods often arrived at Nashville by steamboat and were then transported overland on roads that radiated from the city like the spokes of a wheel. The most famous of these roads, the Natchez Trace, connected Middle Tennessee directly with the lower Mississippi River. Memphis was established in the southwestern corner of the state after the Chickasaw Treaty and quickly developed into a thriving river port on the strength of its steamboat traffic. Cotton bales from Delta plantations were carted into Memphis to be loaded onto boats and shipped to New Orleans. More difficult was the situation of landlocked East Tennessee, which, because of Muscle Shoals and other obstructions on the Tennessee River, lacked a ready outlet to the western waters. Although the steamboat Atlas managed the first upstream navigation as far as Knoxville in 1828, East Tennesseans saw their future in better roads and other improvements to connect them with cities on the eastern seaboard. As early as the 1830s, businessmen in that section began asking for state assistance in building railroads. Generally averse to government spending and with a capital city already served by fine waterways, Tennessee got a late start in railroad construction. The state had no railroad mileage in 1850, but by 1860, 1,200 miles of track had been laid, most of it in East Tennessee. So meager were the commercial ties between the middle and eastern sections that no line connected Knoxville directly with Nashville. East Tennessee began to develop coal mines and industries that, together with its eastward railway connections, caused the section to diverge even further from the rest of the state. Tennessee agriculture achieved great success during this period. In 1840, the state was the largest corn producer in the nation, and in 1850, it raised more hogs than any other state. This success was due as much to the ready access to markets enjoyed by Tennessee farmers as it was to the natural fertility of their land. Tennessee's corn and hog farms contributed a large share of the foodstuffs going downriver to supply Deep South plantations. Diversification was also a strength. While much of the South was caught up in the cotton mania and devoted so much land to the cash crop that food had to be imported, Tennessee developed a varied farm economy. Farmers in different parts of the state raised mules and livestock and produced vegetables and fruits, hemp and tobacco, and various grains in abundance. Tennessee served as a breadbasket to the cotton South, thus both tying it to its sister southern states and setting it apart from them. Another sign of Tennessee's emergence from the frontier stage was the rapid development of cultural and intellectual life. Nashville became an early center of the arts and education in the South. Music publishing gained a foothold in the city as early as 1824, making possible the preservation of many traditional American tunes. By the 1850s, the University of Nashville had grown into one of the nation's foremost medical schools, training many of the physicians who practiced in the trans-Appalachian West. The noted Philadelphia architect William Strickland came to Nashville in 1845 to design and build the new state capitol, one of the finest examples of Greek Revival architecture in the country. Strickland, Nathan Vaught, and the Prussian-born architect Adolphus Hyman also designed a number of ornate churches and residences in Middle Tennessee. The patronage of businesses in the towns and wealthy planters in the countryside gave employment to a considerable number of silversmiths, engravers, furniture makers, stencil cutters, printers, and music teachers. Early Tennessee portrait painters, most notably Ralph E.W. Earle, Washington B. Cooper, and Samuel Shaver, turned out a large volume of technically competent direct likenesses that were well suited to the sober Presbyterian character of their subjects. Antebellum Tennessee supported a sizable community of indigenous craftsmen and artists who nonetheless always had to compete against imported goods brought from eastern cities. The period from 1820 to 1850 was a golden age for Tennessee politics, a time when the state's political leaders wielded considerable influence in the affairs of the nation. None had more of an impact than Andrew Jackson, whose campaigns revolutionized American electoral politics. Jackson was unsuccessful in his first bid for the presidency in 1824, although he received more of the popular and electoral vote than any other candidate. His election by landslide majorities in 1828 and 1832 brought huge numbers of new voters into the system and ushered in the triumph of Western democracy. Gone were the old Virginia and New England aristocrats who had dominated the White House. With Jackson, the torch passed to the heroes of the common man. His image-conscious campaigns made it difficult for anyone to be elected president who could not identify himself with the workers and farmers of the country. Well after his second term expired, Jackson continued to cast a long shadow over Tennessee and national politics, with politicians generally defining themselves according to where they stood on Jackson and his policies. The headstrong chief executive weathered several crises during his 8-year presidency: his veto of a major internal improvements bill, his war against the Second Bank of the United States, and his clash with the South Carolina nullifiers, led by John C. Calhoun, were significant marks of Jackson's administration. Political victories that nonetheless cost the president a good deal of support. Most significant for Tennessee, however, was Jackson's Indian removal policy. The effort to remove the remnants of the southern tribes to land beyond the Mississippi River grew out of Georgia's attempts to take over Cherokee land and property in that state. The Cherokee in North Georgia and southeast Tennessee had long since adopted much of the white man's civilization. Some were slaveholders and prosperous farmers. They had their own newspaper and constitution, and many were more literate than their white neighbors. Georgia was allowed to proceed with its grasping evictions because President Jackson refused to enforce the Supreme Court decision protecting Cherokee autonomy. Instead, he actually ordered the army to begin preparations to remove, forcibly if necessary, the Cherokee from their ancestral land. With the power of the federal government arrayed against them, a handful of tribal members gave in and signed the removal treaty in 1835, but most steadfastly opposed giving up their land. Many Cherokee were still on their land in 1838 when the U.S. Army was dispatched to evict them and send them on a woeful trek to Indian territory, the Trail of Tears. A small band of Cherokee who refused to comply with forced removal escaped into the Smoky Mountains, where their descendants still live. These final lands taken from the once powerful Cherokee were quickly sold by the state to settlers, who soon turned Chief John Ross's Landing into the town of Chattanooga. Among other leading politicians of Tennessee's Golden Age, ironically, were several who developed their careers in opposition to Jackson and his party. William Carroll served 6 terms as governor from 1821 through 1835, despite a conspicuous lack of support from Jackson. David Crockett, Hugh Lawson White, Ephraim Foster, James C. Jones, Newton Cannon, and John Bell made their political fortunes as part of the opposition to the Democrats. While some businessmen resented Jackson's war on the National Bank, others felt excluded by Jackson's tight circle of political handlers. More significantly, many Tennesseans, particularly in the Eastern Division, favored internal improvements and government aid to industry, measures generally at odds with Jacksonian economic policy. As a result, Andrew Jackson's home state became a birthplace of the anti-Jackson Whig Party and a battleground for the two evenly matched political parties. Whig candidates for governor won 6 out of 9 contests between 1836 and 1852. All of the races were extremely close, with none of the victorious candidates receiving as much as 52% of the vote. Whigs also carried Tennessee in 6 consecutive presidential elections. The state went so far as to vote against native Democrat James K. Polk for president in 1844. The ebb and flow of the Democrat and Whig rivalry marked the high point of electoral politics in Tennessee. voter participation rates reached all-time highs due to the fierce competitiveness of the two parties, plentiful political talent, the mass appeal of stump speeches and barbecues for rural voters, and the wide readership of partisan newspapers. During this period, Tennessee earned the nickname Volunteer State for its role in America's wars of expansion. The list of Tennesseans who figured prominently in the War of 1812, the Texas Revolution, the Seminole Wars, and the Mexican War is impressive. Jackson and his troops saved the Gulf Coast from British and Spanish claims and forced Native American tribes to give up major portions of Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Kentucky. Jackson's expedition into Florida in 1818 first brought that territory into the American fold. In 1836, Tennesseans David Crockett and Sam Houston led the fight for Texan independence at the Alamo and San Jacinto. That same year, William Lauderdale took a militia force into central Florida to subdue the Seminoles. Tennesseans volunteered in large numbers for the war with Mexico and bore the brunt of fighting in several key battles. Perhaps the ultimate military adventurer was Nashvillean William Walker, who during the 1850s led several freebooting expeditions to carve out independent slaveholding republics in Lower California and Central America. Tennessee supplied political as well as military leadership for an aggressive young nation seeking to expand its borders. Felix Grundy declared in 1811 that he was anxious not only to add the Floridas to the South, but the Canadas to the north of this empire. Tennessee's congressional representatives were leading war hawks in 1812 and throughout the conflict with Mexico. Having already removed the southern tribes from millions of acres of land, Jackson's final act as president was to recognize the Lone Star Republic. When James K. Polk of Murray County was elected president in 1844, his first act was to annex Texas. The Mexican War was primarily a war of southern expansion, and when it was over, the Polk administration had added California, Oregon, and the New Mexico Territory to the country, nearly as much land as was acquired with the Louisiana Purchase. Tennessee's political golden age thus overlapped with an era when vast domains were added to the nation, in part through the military and political exploits of Tennesseans. Having supplied much of the manpower for the war with Mexico, most Tennesseans resented when anti-slavery Northerners chose the moment of their triumph to raise the issue of banning slavery in the newly won territories. The Wilmot Proviso, which sought to do just that, was introduced in Congress in 1848, setting a match to the political powder keg of slavery. Tennessee's slave population had increased at a faster rate than the general populace, growing from 22.1% of the state's inhabitants in 1840 to 24.8% in 1860. Ownership of slaves was concentrated in relatively few hands, 4.5% out of the state's white populace, 37,000 out of 827,000 were slaveholders in 1860. As the world cotton market and the plantation economy that supplied it geared up, the value of slaves, and hence their importance to slave owners, rose. Nashville and Memphis were renowned centers of the slave trade. The profitability of cotton and slave labor made planters determined to resist northern attacks on their peculiar institution. In the early 1830s, two events signaled a hardening of Tennessee's position on slavery. The Virginia slave uprising led by Nat Turner badly frightened slave owners, prompting whites in Tennessee to step up patrols for runaways and tighten the codes regulating slave conduct, assembly, and movement. Amendment of the state constitution in 1834 to prohibit free blacks from voting reflected whites' growing apprehension over African Americans living in their midst. Free blacks were pressured to leave the state, and rumors of planned slave insurrections kept tensions high. Tennessee had earlier been home to a peaceful emancipation movement, but by the 1850s had become sharply polarized between anti-slavery advocates in East Tennessee and diehard defenders of slavery in West Tennessee. From 1848 onward, slavery became a national issue and overshadowed state issues in the political arena. Political parties and church denominations broke apart over slavery. Newspapers waged a vicious war of words over abolitionism and the fate of the Union. Angry over Northern interference with slavery, delegates from across the South met in 1850 at the Southern Convention in Nashville to express their defiance. With strong economic ties and even stronger social and cultural bonds to the Lower South, Tennessee supported the pro-slavery movement, but not generally speaking, secessionism. Tennessee was home to a powerful nationalist tradition forged through decades of volunteer duty, and most of its citizens were loath to follow Deep South fire eaters in breaking up the Union. The rest of the country stood poised on the brink of disaster in 1860.